I'm Craig Wilson.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And this is Talk Central, episode 91, for Sunday, 18 August 2013.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about MTN's financial results, tablets for Gauteng schools, free Wi-Fi for Pretoria, Capital Radio 604's bid for a license, and the Huawei Ascend P6.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Craig and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Since getting high-speed satellite internet access out here, things have been happening at the lodge. We've posted more pictures.
Yeah.
We've had more inquiries.
Yeah.
And we've had more guests.
Yeah. Yeah. See? Hi. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We.
Yeah.
So, say yeah to YaClick internet access, wherever you are. YaClick, available from Vox Telecom and Atlantic. SMS your name to 48484 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Craig?
Excellent, thank you. Friday afternoon, lovely, sunny, very happy.
Yeah, springtime's almost here. Something to look forward to. Not that it's been a cold winter.
No, not at all. Yeah. But busy week, lots of hot news to cover.
Definitely.
Starting with MTN's financial results.
Yeah, interesting numbers. I was at the results earlier this week. I think it was on Tuesday or Wednesday. Overall, group level, looking pretty good. They have over 200 million customers now in the 22 markets in which they operate.
50 million of them in Nigeria.
Yeah, 55 million
in
Nigeria.
It's amazing, yeah.
But in South Africa, they're not doing so well. And that's a result of competition.
Yes, and what I liked was the fact that in the results there was mention that MTN acknowledged that it had been too slow to respond to price cuts in the market. And we've seen the result. It shed about 400,000 customers, was it?
Yeah, 400,000 customers. They dropped from 25.4 million to 25 million. Sorry, 25.4, what did I say?
25.5 to 25.1, I think it was.
Podcast has just started and I'm really getting my tongue in a, tongue in a knot. 25.4 to 25. While the competitors seem to be standing still or growing, Cell C is certainly growing, and Cell C seems to be the net winner here.
Indeed.
I was chatting to Zunaid Bulia, who's the managing director or the CEO of MTN South Africa, and he said that while they're losing SIM market share, they're not really losing much by way of value market share, revenue market share,
right,
which obviously is the more important metric. Obviously, they don't like to see their subscriber numbers going down, but if they're losing... If they're only losing low-end customers who don't spend much, then the question is, are they really losing all that much?
Sure, would make sense, because those are certainly those, not only the customers most liable to move, but the customers for whom it's easiest to move.
Bottom end of the market.
I've ported twice in the last year, and part of the reason that's been so easy is because I'm a prepaid customer.
Sure.
It certainly makes it much simpler.
Yeah, yeah.
But otherwise, as you said, group results are still good. They're still doing very well in, MTN operate now in 20 markets
20,
or so?
22. It used to be 21, and then it became 22 after Sudan split into two.
right.
So they automatically got a license in South Sudan. They're doing well. The share price went over 200 rand for the first time, giving it a market capitalization of amazing market capitalization of 375 billion rand.
Good Lord. And you compare that to something like Telkom, and it's really really incredible what they've done in the last, 20 years less.
Indeed. I haven't looked at Telkom's market cap recently, but it was below 10 billion. When I looked a few weeks ago,
sure.
Share price has had a good run recently, so I think it's probably back above 10 billion. But Telkom is a tiny fraction of the value of MTN. They took some big bets early on. You know, Nigeria was considered to be a big risk when they went in there.
Sure, tough market to really make it in.
It's now their most profitable market by far.
Sure.
They've gone into some pretty dodgy places, and some of those places have burnt them. I mean, they've had...
There seem to be ongoing problems with one of them, right? Iran seems to continue to present obstacles, one of them being how to actually repatriate the income out of the country.
Yeah, because of the US sanctions, and they're in discussions with the US State Department and the US Treasury about ways of getting the money out of Iran with the sanctions imposed on that country. So they operate in some pretty challenging environments, but they've generally speaking done quite well. I mean, they operate in places like Sudan, Yemen, Afghanistan, Iran, Syria.
Sure.
These are some of the dodgiest places on the planet.
But by the same token, I guess, I mean, this is the point, is that these are markets that people are reluctant to perhaps jump at. And also, as MTN's learnt in many markets, if you get in on the ground floor, you know, 10 years down the line, it's very difficult for someone else to compete. I mean, we see that here with Cell C and Telkom Mobile trying to compete with Vodacom and MTN. And perhaps they just decided that getting in early was worth the risk.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that you get a big first mover advantage in mobile telecoms. If you're first in the market,
absolutely.
You've got a good head start. Some markets it hasn't paid off. I mean, in Syria, which is in a war situation at the moment, it's been a disaster for them. They're losing customers. I mean, it's a nightmare to try and run a network in that environment. Safisa Dibengwa, the group CEO, was saying at the results presentation that at any given time, half of their base stations are down in Syria.
Good Lord.
It's
certainly an air practice in crisis management.
Yeah. Anyway, MTN has reacted to the price cuts now, and they've introduced some new packages, a 50% Mahala product that they launched in June, and obviously they cut their prepaid OneNet rate, One World rate, I forget what the exact title was, back in February. It's one of their prepaid packages.
Sure.
To $120 per minute on per second billing to match Vodacom. Not quite as cheap as Cell C, and certainly not as cheap as the new rates from Telkom Mobile. But they have cut their rates, and they say that they're sort of more on track now in terms of being able to recover some of the lost momentum in the first half of the year. So yeah, we'll see what their numbers look like at the end of the year. But I think things are going to get a lot more exciting this year anyway, with the plans to cut termination rates further from next March. Going to be a big bun fight at the regulator. And of course, Alan O'Craig and Cell C are pushing hard for asymmetry in termination rates.
Right.
And Vodacom and MTN are going to fight this to the death.
So yes.
It's going to be a fascinating one to watch over the next couple of months as those hearings and that process gets kicked off.
I'll be sure to take popcorn.
Greg, you attended a Gauteng provincial government press conference this week where they announced the replacement for the controversial Gauteng Online project, which was a project to provide computers and internet access into the province's schools.
Indeed, and which the failings of which provided subs with great headlines like Gauteng goes offline and so on.
But, sure. So what's happening now? They've got a new tender out and they're having another go with a new project.
That's right. So this time around, it's called the e-learning solution, or most of the journals have just settled on e-learning. And the idea is that they're arguing that getting people computer labs connected to the internet is no longer good enough. Technology has moved on, and the suggestion now is that tablets are perhaps a better tool for education. And so they're looking to roll out 88,000 Huawei media pads, the 10-inch varieties, to 2,200 government schools in Gauteng, or really all the government schools in Gauteng. The idea is to provide 40 tablets to each school, which they say should be enough to cover a single class at a time. And the idea is that then, much as people would previously have had computer lessons during the week, those will now happen in any classroom because the tablets are far more portable. And this will supply at least a full class of learners at a time with access to tablets. Now, of course, one of the problems here is actually getting content and things. You know, as they said, the department said, in an ideal world, every student would have a tablet, but that's just not feasible at the moment from a cost perspective. So I asked some questions about, how do we control the curriculum and so on? And the idea is that, at least at first, students will have access to everything, all of the online materials that the Gauteng Department of Education is going to supply. And that they'll have access to all of it rather than, logging in and having a custom setting for each learner. But they are looking at that. I think what's going to worry some of the critics about this project is that the connectivity angle, which is, that each of these schools also needs to have internet access and Wi-Fi, is to be supplied by a company called Cloudseed. Now, Cloudseed was formerly known as SMMT, and Cloudseed was the turnkey provider, as the department put it, for the Gauteng Online project. And they were really responsible for everything from the hardware to the connectivity to anything. One of the problems with Gauteng Online, though, was that the department opted to lease the equipment from Cloudseed. So at the end of Gauteng Online, the argument is that there was nothing to show for it. So the department says it's learned its lesson, and this time around it's buying the tablets from Huawei outright at a cost of, I think it was 289 million rand, and then it's got a further contract for 109 or 110 million rand with Cloudseed to provide connectivity. Now, as you can imagine, there were a lot of questions from the collected journos saying, well, surely if Cloudseed failed to deliver in full the first time around, you don't use them again. And they were at pains to argue that, firstly, it was simply came down to a matter of price, that Cloudseed was the most competitive, although, of course, again, people would argue they'd happily pay more for better service. But they've also said that they've put a number of clauses into the contract with Cloudseed. Part of the the agreement is that there are a lot of punitive measures if they don't meet their obligations, and those obligations include 95% connectivity uptime. And the other thing that they argued would assist was that Cloud Seed is to be paid monthly in arrears. And so if there's even a single month where they don't live up to it, they won't get paid. But I've got a healthy bit of skepticism left about it. The other thing I worry about is really by the time these projects are rolled out, you know, you must wonder, the tech moves so quickly. I wonder where the government buying 289 million rands worth of tablets is such a good idea. I think in this sort of instance, actually, perhaps leasing gear might be better because you can upgrade it in a year's time. But I'm trying not to be too skeptical.
My worries is they're going to get stolen. Are the kids going to be able to take these things home? Or?
No, I mean, this is the other point. If they're going to be shared, they're going to have to be kept on site. Yeah. They've said there's a part of the contract involves insurance as well, but you know, that's not the point. The point is the sort of logistical nightmare too. You imagine trying to replace a tablet every few months and the paperwork required and how you actually go about doing it through a government department. And this sounds like it could be a rather difficult project. Also, the timeline's very optimistic, right? The idea is to educate all of the necessary teachers in over 2,000 schools by January next year. Anyway, the department feels good about it. I'm not holding my breath, but of course we'll keep an eye on it.
Well, we'll watch this very closely. I think, I mean, let's try and be optimistic about it. I mean, it's
no, indeed. You know,
it's a good, it's an interesting endeavor.
The right noises are being made.
I guess there has to be a healthy dose of skepticism for. And to be fair, it was the Limpopo province, but
well, particularly given the track record of South African education
delivering textbooks and
delivering anything. Sort
of thing. Yes. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on it. Let's not be too pessimistic.
No, indeed, indeed. But we've, on the back of that, I was going to say we've got a rather a good news story. I know this one's rather close to your heart. It's about Capital Radio 604, isn't it?
Yeah, I grew up listening to this radio station down in Durban. It was a fantastic independent news channel. It was a very important channel back in the 1980s because it was the only independent news service on the airwaves back then, certainly on the east coast of South Africa. I forget when Talk Radio 702 launched, but I think it was later. They were a great station. They had a lot of British DJs, but they started out on the Wild Coast, in Port St. John's, in a big house there. I think it was the Portmaster's house. Sounded like it was a fun time, but some of the great DJs in South Africa, some of the guys that's on radio today, were schooled through 604. It was speak to anyone sort of over the age of 30 or 35 who comes from Durban or lives in Durban, and they'll remember Capital Radio with fond memories.
Sure.
Now there's an attempt. It was always a medium wave station. They had a transmitter in the Transkei. They used the apartheid loopholes to use the nominally independent state of the Transkei to put up a broadcast tower. I think Bantu Hall and Miso issued the license, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
I could be wrong there, but they took advantage of the independent homeland system that the apartheid government created. And they had a transmitter in the Transkei, beaming towards high power transmitter, beaming towards Durban and Pietermaritzburg and other parts of the country. You could pick up the signal in Johannesburg even at night. But it was great listening to it. And, you know, when there was a thunderstorm around, you'd hear the crackle of the medium wave. There was something almost romantic about the station.
Right.
Anyway, they're making a comeback, attempting to make a comeback.
With some big names behind
with,
them.
With the backing of one Tito Mboweni, the governor.
The governor.
The former governor of the South African Reserve Bank. He's a 40% shareholder, or his consortium is a 40% shareholder. Some other, legends in the broadcasting industry involved in that, including the guy who I think is running it, Kevin Savage. I think many of you may know from the radio.
Right, I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, he was on 5FM, I think, in the day, and obviously intimately involved in Capital. I think more recently he's been involved in a radio station called M-Power in Mpumalanga, although I stand to correction there. Anyway, I went to the ICASA hearings this week where they were making their case to Councillor William Curry and a large contingent of ICASA staff as to why they should be licensed. And they really want to sort of bring back the station. I think William Curry asked some really interesting questions about whether this is not all just a bit of nostalgia and have you guys really got a business case here?
Sure.
But they do seem to have done the prep work here. There's a chap called Mark Williams, a very nice guy who's involved in this as well. I had a chat with him briefly at the event. He's going to be heading up I think he's going to be their chief technology officer or their technology director. And they're very keen to launch not only a medium wave version of 604 and analog radio signals, but also the digital version of medium wave, which is something called Digital Radio Mondial, DRM.
Right.
not to be confused with the anti-piracy technology.
Indeed, that had such an understandably bad rap.
Yes, indeed, still does. And DRM is really interesting. Mark was demoing very briefly a DRM receiver he had there that was picking up, I think it was the BBC World Service or some similar radio station that was being broadcast all the way from Ascension Island during the daytime, and the signal was great. The audio quality sounded fine.
Phenomenal.
And in fact, with DRM, you can do up to Dolby Surround 5.1 broadcasts.
Wow.
And if you've got a powerful signal, it sounds as good as, if not better than the FM dial.
Fantastic.
So it's really, really interesting stuff. Yeah, interesting presentation. So I'm hoping they're going to be back on the airwaves soon. They've said that at launch they're also going to have an internet presence. I listen to all my radio on the internet now through TuneIn. I don't even know if I have an active receiver in my house anymore.
I've had that problem. I was getting out of my car the other night and wanted to keep listening to something in the house, and I had to figure out what I could use to do so.
TuneIn radio.
Exactly. Yeah, and I settled on an app on my tablet. Yeah.
No, TuneIn radio is just absolutely fantastic. But so they're going to be broadcasting over the airwaves to Durban and Pietermaritzburg. Their intention is to put up a transmitter at Cato Ridge, which is about halfway between Durban and Maritzburg. But they'll also be online through apps like TuneIn, I'm sure. All the Durbanites who now live in Johannesburg or other parts of the world can...
Well, I was going to say, if people are worried about the business model, it certainly has to go some way to alleviating those doubts when you have the former Reserve Bank governor backing you. So.
For sure. And there's such a community of people who are such fans of this radio station.
Sure.
I mean, there's a very active Facebook group. There's a podcast in iTunes where the old shows are rebroadcast or put together. It's interesting stuff, and I'm looking forward to them getting their license and getting on there. It's going to be a little while still before they obviously get their transmitter built and that sort of thing. But yeah, let's hope ICASA decides that their business case is a good one.
It's sound, yeah.
Anyway, I think on the news front, let's wrap it up quickly, Craig, with the function we both attended last night. And that was the launch of Huawei's new Ascend P6 smartphone, which is quite something. And I think it's really a case of Huawei, the Chinese manufacturer, putting a stake in the ground and saying, hey, look at us, we're here, we can compete with the best.
Sure.
And it's a really, really interesting device. It's super thin. They bill it as the thinnest smartphone in the world.
Yeah, 6.3 millimeters, that's right.
6.18 millimeters, I think it was.
Oh, actually. I see.
It's even thinner. It's thinner than the iPhone 5.
It is. We checked. We put it next to an iPhone 5.
Noticeably thinner than the iPhone 5, in fact.
It looks distinctly like it on the edge.
It does. The top edge of the phone
looks
exactly like an iPhone.
Straight from the iPhone fold.
But the Chinese have never been scared of borrowing ideas from other manufacturers.
But it's a good-looking piece of hardware. I mean, the idea really, right, is that this is a high-end smartphone at a mid-range smartphone price.
Yeah, it's going to fetch about $5,000, if I'm not mistaken. So a good $3,000 or $4,000 less than your top-end S4s and iPhones.
Sure, and there's some novel features. The things like a 5-megapixel front-facing camera, so that you can take those really high-quality selfies you've always wanted to take, Duncan. The idea, right, is that it's not really skimping on features. Because a lot of these phones we see, these sort of ones that are trying to target more of a budget market, cut a lot of corners on processors and cameras and these sorts of specs, understandably, to keep the cost down.
Sure.
And this seems to be why we wanted to say, well, even with... cutting the odd corner, we can still build a device that's sufficiently premium to compete with the S4s and the iPhones of this world.
Mm, absolutely.
I mean, I've only played with it very briefly, but it seemed very slick. I don't care too much for the Huawei interface.
Yeah, the skin is a bit... I haven't been able to determine yet if you can change it. It comes with a sort of golden brown layer over it. I've managed to change the background picture, but the icons have still got this golden brown color to it, which doesn't really appeal to me. I quite like the fonts they've used and the sort of the design style in the icons, which I think kind of looks a bit like iOS 7 is going to look in some respects, it's not bad. You can see they've put a lot of effort into it. I'm just not sure it appeals to me 100%.
Sure. Well, either way, they've done a good job, and it'll be interesting to see how it sells. And of course, we will have a full review of the device up next week.
Absolutely.
I think that's about all the time we've got for news this week. Quickly, let's chat about our winner and loser. We'll start with the loser this week. We've already covered it, really. I think the loser this week is MTN for their poor performance in the South African market and for their slow reaction to competition, although they certainly get some kudos for admitting that they were slow to react. And this week's winner, well, this is a surprising one, isn't it, Duncan? Who have we got?
Yes, I didn't think we'd be picking a politician as our winner of the week, but after giving it due consideration, I think we have to pick our winner this week as the new communications minister, Yunus Karim, for having a sense of humour. And he gave a presentation recently to the South African National Editors Forum, at which he made some very amusing remarks. We published it on Tech Central. Go and have a look what he said. But basically, he was reacting to some of the comments and pieces and stuff that's been said about him since his appointment. I wish we'd read a couple of paragraphs here because it's really, really good. It says, of course, the Democratic Alliance and others express concern that as a South African Communist Party Politburo member, I'm going to go for nationalisation. Well, I'll tell you what, in the interests of openness and transparency, and yes, government is capable of this, the moment the President appointed me, I broke into a heart-rending rendition of the Internationale. And of course, I immediately Googled Joseph Stalin for his views on broadband and digital terrestrial television and local loop unbundling. You know what? Joe is cool about this. He's all for it, except that he wasn't sure about which type of set-top boxes were most ideologically sound. He can't know everything, can he? Stalin agrees with most of what the major stakeholders in the ICT sector say. Okay, I don't agree with the methods he insists on of how to get there. You know Stalin. But please be assured, he fully supports rapid transformation of the ICT sector. So we had a very good laugh about this when we saw this.
Oh, he says, I love the next line. He says, what? Anyway, this thing about me being a communist and therefore bad for the ICT sector is, if you'll excuse the pun, a red herring.
Very good. Yunus Karim, for that, you're our winner of the week. Craig, before we go, we obviously have to choose our Apple product of the week. Why don't you go first? What have you got?
Super, we'll make it nice and quick. My pick is called Tales of Us, and it's for the iPhone, and it costs R7.99. And it's made by a band. It's made by the band Goldfrapp. They're a UK two-piece. They've just released a new album. Well, actually, I think the album's out in a week or two's time. And as a promotional tool, they've released this little app called Tales of Us, and it basically allows you to do double exposures. So you can either take new photos or choose existing photos from your photo gallery, and overlay them, get some interesting outputs, and share them to all the usual social medias. Now, I'm a sucker for camera apps. That's how I ended up with this one, and it's great fun. If you're not sure which pictures to use, you can also just shake your phone like a madman, and it'll pick two pictures for you.
Cool. And you say that's for the iPhone?
That's right, for iPhone, and it's R7.99.
Cool. Right, my pick of the week is, being a bit of an Android fanboy, my pick of the week is...
Just a bit.
It's just a bit, yes. Just about as much of an Apple fanboy as you are. My pick this week is the Omega ROM series. It's a custom ROM. If you don't know what that is, it's ROMs are Android versions of Android that are developed by enthusiasts. So Cyanogen, something called Cyanogen Mod is the most popular custom ROM. I've installed something called the Omega ROM series on my Galaxy S4.
Is it the last one you'll ever need? I'm going on that name.
Yes, indeed. It's very good. It basically takes the Samsung software, strips out all of the extraneous crud, basically the stuff you don't need, all the additional kitchen sink stuff that Samsung throws in, and repackages, makes some tweaks, makes it faster. It actually seems to have a bit better battery life, and it's really good. It's really snappy ROM. It seems to be updated very frequently, and it's available for Samsung Galaxy S devices. Well worth checking out if you are brave enough to root your phone and flash a new ROM onto it.
I suspect many of our listeners are just the brave.
Exactly, I'm sure. Yeah, definitely our audience. Anyway, that's all the time for this week. Craig, as always, if you have any feedback on the show, you can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, from Craig and myself, cheers.